watching the monkey.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Being with the ACT Matrix. I'm one of your co-hosts, Phil. I'll get this straight any minute. I just got off of travel, so I'm all fouled up. I'm Kevin, and I'm probably below me on the YouTube screen.
Somewhere in there, it's Phil. Hi.
It's Phil, and then we have Izzy Clark with us today. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Yes, we always like to start with a word from our sponsor, which is us.
at least Phil and I.
Yeah, the two of us. Yeah. Right. So we're able to produce the podcast through the ACT Matrix certification program that Kevin and I have been running. And, you know, we're really working to build a community of like-minded folks who are into doing generous work by having collaborative conversations with those that they serve and help everybody get where they want to go. Yes. And all you have to do to get started is to go to the ACT Matrix Academy and sign up through the website, or you can click on the link below if you're watching on YouTube.
And what you're signing up for is the free training.
Yeah. Training's free.
The training's free. It's the certification
that's what helps us pay the bills.
Right. You'd pay a fee right. for. But we always wanted the training to be free just in case somebody can't afford that. Right. So.
And we have a number of trainings coming up. We're ongoing training. So
of course, this recording will live forever.
Yeah.
Go out into outer space and all around. But right now on January the 27th, 2020, we just decided to do one beginning on February the 5th.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for more information about that.
You'll be hearing more about that.
Yep. So there we go.
Yep.
And as a happy client, I can say it's well worth it. And the sessions are really, really good fun as well as educational. And you do feel that you're part of a community. And I think for a lot of people, that's invaluable.
Hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And that's right. Izzy came through our little certification ditty. That looks a lot like this.
Yeah.
And we sound a lot like this.
Yes.
There's just more people showing up.
There's more people, right? Because Phil and I tend to not put on any airs and really act much different at any time in our lives.
But an awful lot of really, really useful information and incredible insights and fascinating stories of how the ACT Matrix works and very inspiring.
Oh, thank you. We enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
I hope people can tell we have a good time.
Yeah.
And then we get other people having a good time. It's about psychological flexibility. And psychological flexibility is usually related to a good time. Flexibility in your when you get stuck and not having a good time. Yeah, not so much. Okay, what are we talking about today, Izzy?
We're talking about mindful movement.
Mindful movement.
Yes.
I love it.
Yep.
And I wanted to talk about this because I've been having a lot of insights and moments of inspiration, you know, real aha moments in the gym with my personal trainer.
Hold on, with your what? With your
he's a boxing coach.
He's a personal trainer. I just got an email from another personal trainer just yesterday that uses the Matrix, believe it or not.
Neat.
Isn't that cool, Phil?
Yeah, that's great.
That's why I perked up my ears when I heard that. Right. Okay. So your personal while you're working with your personal trainer.
Yeah.
And do you have an aha moments?
A lot of aha moments. And I've always done, you know, bits and pieces of Keep Fit. And I've done yoga for a long time, which is the paradigm of mindful movement. But I found I've got a lot more noticing moments since I've started doing the boxing training. Mm. And it's easier for me to talk about it considering the Matrix. And I know that, Phil, you'll be able to
draw
in the diagram.
Right. You want me to put my prop up now, Izzy? I'm ready for you.
Okay, hold on. We gotta get our listeners, our Spotify and such listeners. He's now holding up a sign that has senses at the top, mind at the bottom, toward to the right, and away to the left, which is the ACT Matrix, which is a short short way to getting to psychological flexibility, thing I was mentioning before. So there we go, Izzy. So according, looking at the matrix here, you're going to describe your mindful boxing.
Yes, and the thing that's been really noticeable for me is
I made that part up.
My mindful boxing. I think about it carefully before I talk about
that, you know. Yeah, right. Yeah, you can get tongue twisted there pretty quickly.
I'm probably by nature, by personality, inclined to be uncertain and insecure and to need a lot of validation. And I noticed after a while, you know, maybe after sort of 6 months, that I was walking forward into conflict. I was walking toward a conflict rather than having that, you know, and that huge desire to run away. Sometimes it would raise up and I'd feel the adrenaline response. I'd feel that sort of like flutteriness and the heartbeat, except it was translated into excitement and challenge rather than threat and anxiety in that context. But as soon as I noticed it, I could think, oh, wow, this is transferable. There are other occasions that I can notice this sense of, you know, physical somatic anxiety, and I can reframe it and walk forwards into it. And it was just incredibly empowering for me. And in fact, the first trans man to box in Madison Square Gardens, a guy called Thomas Page McBee, he's written a really good book called Amateur, where he goes through boxing training. And that's one of the things that he totally highlighted, that awareness of walking into threat and walking into challenge voluntarily and taking your fear with you. You know, you're not pretending that you're not afraid. It's just that it kind of loses its relevance. It's just something that you take with you into challenge. And when I started noticing that, I was so excited by noticing it that I had a burst of enthusiasm and then could start to notice a lot of other things that were coming up during the sessions.
Oh, wow.
Great.
What were you writing, Phil?
She was writing, I was
jotting.
I was jotting stuff down because I was writing down kind of your journey there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you're moving toward conflict, leaning into it, and where in the past that uncertainty would be there big time.
It would be like a huge anchor.
And then the noticing, you know, you get that excitement stuff going along with the uncertainty, and now you're kind of taking that all with you.
Yes, and the thing that then started to happen that I noticed happening was that choice had become something that almost wasn't cognitive. It had become, you know, became habitual.
Yeah.
So that's choice to move into the challenge was what was normalized for me, and it no longer became something I had to have any kind of consciousness of at all, which was really cool. And then as I got more proficient in doing the sparring training, and we work on a lot of sequences, and sometimes they can be really complicated, you know, with sort of like three punches, and then you duck and you or you might slip and you're doing steps and then another sequence of punches, and there's all this kind of like cognitive stuff going on, and you notice this balance between the cognitive fatigue and physical fatigue. So at the beginning of that session, there's all this cognitive effort going on and your brain's having to do all this stuff. And then you get into a process where you've kind of like learnt the sequence and you feel really great. And then the physical fatigue comes in.
Yeah.
And you're always in this balancing place between where your mind's tired and where your body's tired. And the thing that what I was talking about with my coach the last time I went was that it's almost like you're sort of working on three levels. When you're in that moment, there's the sort of immediate response, and it might be your instinctive response, which initially for me was run away. But had then subsequently
survival response.
But then had subsequently become fight. You know, so I'd move from flight to fight in a, you know, in this given context. So my immediate response had changed, And that was the sort of like instinctive thing that was sort of like coming up in a given sequence. Mm-hmm. And then there's another process of mind, and you guys will be so much better able to explain how this is working. That's the sort of like cognitive, conceptual thinking one that's kind of really clunky and slow and can't keep up with your movements or your immediate responses. But yeah, you kind of have to have it, you know, sort of there to work things out if something goes wrong. But
it's the patterns.
Yeah.
The patterns.
Pattern recognition part of the brain. Yep.
Ah. And then there's another bit that's just the noticing, which you just have to have switched on all the time. Because if that switch is off, then those other two areas both go out of sync. So what's happening to me there?
What was happening to you?
I mean, how would you had that feeling of having three different levels of?
Oh my God, that's noticing.
That's advanced noticing.
That's called noticing. Our buzzing.
Yeah, buzzing. Right.
Buzz, termed by Hank Robb, buzzing.
Yeah.
And so, for folks, we drew the matrix, and then you can draw a circle in the middle of the matrix. Sort of the first circle, you write psychological flexibility, because that's the target of all this, is psychological flexibility, sort of scientific-wise. But then you can sort of erase that and say, yeah, well, we don't need to think about that a lot. What we need to think about is the skill that's called noticing, where you can take a step back from your own self and notice. And then lo and behold, you do this that enough, and then one day you notice yourself noticing. Now that's the buzz. It's totally nonverbal. There's no,
yes.
And that's why I said pattern recognition. And I don't want to get too heady with folks, but most people have heard this. What humans are really good at is pattern recognition. When we look at letters, you know, in the English we have A, B, C, D, and any set of, you know, Chinese characters, Japanese, whatever that's called in Japanese. You have it. Well,
kanji? Is it kanji?
It's a pattern. It's period. It's a pattern. Just like the fabric on Phil's shirt is a pattern. Yeah. And we recognize patterns. Right. And that's nonverbal. Pattern recognition is nonverbal. Well, one of the things that athletes do when they get to the buzz, the flow, in athletics, they call that the flow, is suddenly you've internalized all the patterns that you've been taught. So Phil does a keto.
Right.
Well, Phil, at this point of the game, he's been at it for 10 years now or so. Yeah. There's patterns, right, Phil?
Yes, absolutely.
There's
just a doing
pattern.
The same thing the other night about moving in, before they strike.
And that's but that's part of a pattern.
You have to learn.
And then there's another part. Then there's another. But you can't be thinking about the pattern.
No.
You're not gonna have time to think. But you can certainly buzz the pattern.
Yeah.
It can be there. Well, boxing is the same way. Anybody who's watched quite a bit of boxing, and believe it or not, Izzy, I've actually watched quite a bit of boxing, because it's interesting to me. If you watch the really good fighters and how they pattern punches, and how they especially early in a match, they have a pattern of things that they're doing. And it's those great boxers that can recognize the patterns of the other person.
Yes.
And then counteract those and spot the hole in that pattern, and then bam them, you know, I hit them in the middle of that pattern. That's it. That's what you're doing. It's pattern recognition. So that's how I would describe it. And that's a nonverbal process. Because you're not going to be thinking, oh, now it would be a nice time to throw a jab.
Too late.
Well, about that time,
one in the face, right?
You're going to be in about number five of an eight count.
And to me, I'm not a very quick thinker. I mean,
There you are.
Yeah.
No, I am now. It's accelerating. It's accelerating my thought process. I've always been, you know, I've always preferred that kind of, you know, sort of like long involved looking at something, pondering over something. And then
that's verbal.
Yes.
Now, what I immediately, and I don't mean correct you like that, but everybody's a fast thinker when it comes to staying alive and getting out of the way of buses. Yeah. And
I hadn't practiced it, and I didn't.
And boxing gloves coming at your face and stuff like that. That's fast. That's very fast. And Daniel Kahneman,
I was just thinking that
psychologist literally wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. Mm-hmm. So everybody does fast thinking. But it's how we go about contemplating verbally things. That's the slow thinking.
That's what I think, Scott, really interesting is that the more I've been able to tune in to that aspect of my thinking, or to notice that aspect.
Oh, there you go. Noticing. Yeah.
In a particular arena, because I guess it's happening a lot of times with sort of like in, you know, like biases and that kind of thing. It's happening all the time. But I'm able to sort of notice that that's happening in that arena. And then I notice something, and I guess both of you will have experienced this in sports, that if you're training a particular sequence in boxing or in Aikido or something that's got, you know, four or five moves, every single time you do that one shot, you're getting immediate feedback from what the context of the hit feels like.
Exactly.
And that immediate feedback, you're then adjusting it with your physicality without thinking, oh, I really need to lift my elbow higher. When the coach says you need to lift your elbow higher, everything slows down because it becomes the slow thinking again.
Right.
If you're doing it just on the reaction of that feedback, what I thought was that the feedback, like negative feedback, and it sort of transferred.
Pain?
Well, no, just where it felt wrong. And I'm probably
hugely...
It didn't work.
Not workable, that's the thing.
Right, where it didn't work, right.
So I'm probably hugely overgeneralizing, but it felt to me like negative feedback. I was getting this negative feedback, which in many situations in life elsewhere, I give a feeling affect to. Yeah, so this is... This is bad. This creates failure.
Noticing for what it is, it just
It was just information processing. So this feedback, be it positive or negative, it had valence of positivity or negative. Right. It didn't have affect.
Right. She's describing the essence of workability.
And I felt it there. And it was like what you had been saying to me in these courses. I was experiencing it there. And I thought, I've got to talk to you about that.
That's cool.
Terrific.
These are not easy plateaus to reach, folks. No.
But you're putting yourself in the context, too.
You put yourself in the context to where finally...
You call it arena, you know, that's context. If I'm on the Aikido mat, that's my context. And then I go, and you go.
But then do you think, Phil, that then once you've thought to yourself, hey, wait a second, feedback here doesn't have to be something I feel sad about or negative about. It can, when I take it into my work,
or when
I take it into my personal life, it can just be feedback.
And that's really all it is.
Yeah.
That's all that it is. It either worked or it didn't.
Yeah.
And most of the time, workability. Now, the great thing about sports and what some of the things that people love about sports is the immediacy of the feedback. Where in life, a lot of the things you do take days, weeks, and months
before
you figure out, is this thing that I'm doing working or not? Some stuff is fast, but other stuff is really quite, you know, slow. It really is.
And the feedback can be hazy as well, can't it?
It can be very hazy, right? So the verbal, where sports is gorgeous. It's usually very clear cut.
And the people watching it know too. You know,
everybody knows whether it works or not, right? And so
there's a sort of purity and a truth to it that's lacking.
Which I think is in part why people love sports.
Yeah. That's what draws them to it.
It draws them to the immediacy of the feedback. There's other things as well, but that's one. I'm talking to people who play the sports, to get into it and do it and notice the buzz of it, get into the flow of it, get into the learning, the pure learning, which is tweaking what works versus what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those are very small tweaks when you first learn, they're big tweaks. Yeah. But later on, they're little tweaks, little bitty things, nuances, teeny little nuances that you would have never noticed until you'd have done it 1,000 times.
That's it.
And there's that weird sense as well that you get something right one time and you know that it was right, but you don't know what you did to
and
do
you
it.
Just try to feel it.
Yeah. You'll never 50 yeah. times.
Here comes verbal analysis yeah. and it's not going to work.
What did I just do there? Forget it.
just let it soak in. Just learn. Stay with the flow and learn and get back to it. Go to the next step.
So guys, if people aren't really into sport, in what other arenas do you think that they can kind of experience this? Because I think there is something that's really helpful.
Well, I think another whole avenue that it's not a sport, but people get this is yoga.
Yeah.
The people that really hardline do yoga and what I consider a relatively close kin to it, which is Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga, you're a lot of times down on your butt, where in Tai Chi you're always up
standing up,
but it's a lot the same mindful yeah. movement, and it's certainly non-competitive. It's not yeah. but you get to where you're going to repeat something over and over. I go to way back when I took a course on meditation, and I don't mean it was how to meditate. I mean, it was a scientific course about meditation and all the different ways. And one of the ways we learned about was the Japanese tea ceremony. Mm-hmm. And so there's these, and it's usually women, by the way, or at least that was the tradition. They serve tea the same way over and 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 over thousands of times of the Japanese tea ceremony. And then what you can discover in a tea ceremony, that is serving tea, making tea, stirring tea, pouring tea. It's really fascinating. I know Phil knows a little bit about it.
Flower arranging,
exactly.
stewardship.
Uh-huh.
They're all vehicles to workability is really what it comes right
they
down.
They really are, right. It's discovering the buzz.
Yeah.
The buzz, getting to the flow. And so those kinds of activities are really non-sport, but at the same
time. Art and music maybe as well.
Yeah. And there we go, music.
There's another one.
I would imagine people who get very good at music, same kind of thing. So there are definitely other activities where they're mindful in their nature. And the nice thing to do is to let go of the thoughts. And what you're feeling then, in my humble opinion, is the absence of verbal mediation.
Yeah.
And it's people say, well, you know, how in the world could I experience that? Well, easy. From the time you were born.
How'd you learn how to talk?
That's the way you did it. That's how you learned how to talk, as a matter of fact.
Ride a bike.
Ride a bike and all kinds of other things. So it is an ability that you already have. It's just covered up. Yeah. By all these words
my boxing coach doesn't do meditation, but he does do a lot of weight training, and he's always said to me, you know, when I've said, oh well, you know, I find my mindfulness meditation habit useful, and he says, yeah, I do weightlifting, and I've just kind of thought, whatever, you know. But now that I'm doing that, well, you cannot think in words if the weight's heavy enough. All you can think about is the workability. There is nothing left for clunky.
No words are gonna.
Well, in my sport, as I have tennis. Well, if you're on YouTube, you can look behind me and see a couple of tennis rackets that I put up. As I like to say, if I play guitar as well as I played tennis, I'd be out playing gigs on guitar. I'm a pretty good tennis player. And it's a mindful activity for me.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, and other people will agree, they have a modern contraption called a tennis ball machine, and it will launch tennis balls at you, you know, and you can adjust it so the rate is right and all that. Ah, darn. It is so mindful. once you get into the groove, it's just so cool. It's just boom, boom, boom. It is, and you can totally blank out, not be thinking of a darn thing. Yeah. Just be hitting balls back. And now I do it with intention. Quick lesson in tennis, folks, hit to the two deep corners. Watch the pros. They're hitting to the deep corners. That's where you're aiming for most of the time. So that's what you do. Ball machine hits it, you hit for the deep corner. You know what? You don't hit it all the time. What do? You adjust. Mm-hmm. Don't verbally adjust. Non-verbally adjust. That's what we're talking about here. Same with the keto. You know, somebody comes in, they grab you, you do this.
Yeah.
Notice how it works.
Yeah. And to do that, you need to be in a relaxed,
very relaxed,
non-focused state, like you're taking in the field.
Yeah. Oh, I saw another tennis video the other day, and there was this one of these old sages, and he says there's five things that you need to do to be a good tennis player or to improve your tennis. And the guy says, well, what? He says, well, number one is relax. Yeah. And number two is relax.
Gee, what's number three?
You're seeing the pattern. Notice that pattern recognition, it kicked in, right? All five are relax.
Get the tension.
Exactly what you just said, Phil. Relax. That's it. Right.
That's the big thing is if you're not relaxed, everything tenses up and the learning stops.
The learning stops, right. Once you tense up that arm, whether it be a keto or weightlifting or boxing or any of it, once you it's not that you tense it, it's the right tension.
Yeah. Yes.
Whatever that knowing is. When to apply tension, when to be apply tension.
Oh, it's the right tension because it can't be limp because then you'd be a dish rag.
Yeah.
And it can't be so tight that you're standing there like a 2x4. Yeah. Can't be that either. It's got to be this relaxed, you know, awareness. I guess that's a good term for it. Relaxed awareness, everybody. That's it. Basketball, boxing, weightlifting, yoga.
And yoga. And it's really helped my yoga, actually, the greater awareness that I've got through doing this other training, the more noticing, because, you know, before my yoga teacher would be saying, oh, you know, you're not supposed to be using your triceps, you're supposed to be using your lats. And I didn't know, these would just think, you know, that meant nothing to me.
Yeah, right.
I had no idea. But now, you know, the level of proprioception, also, you know, by doing weightlifting and developing muscles, I hadn't really, but I've got the proprioception.
Yeah. Proprioception.
So I know what the right one is.
People and not so, familiar with that term. It's knowing where your hands in where your limbs are in space. And you do enough of that, you begin to have a feeling for at least the big muscle groups that are controlling those limbs. And that's what she's referring to. And yeah, and you'll always hear them. I hear them refer to them too. And I'm like, I can't feel my tricep. If you do it 1,000 times, you can. Yeah. Most of the time, it's about 1,000 times away.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. In the keto, we learn a technique, and then sensei says, now just go do that 1,000 times.
It's you know, I don't know if 1,000 is the right one, but it's the one everybody likes to say.
Just do it every day.
Great number. I guarantee you it is somewhere around that.
That's right.
Right.
I had another experience the other day. Well, there's two things that I had flagged up in my mind and said to my boxing coach when I saw him yesterday. Oh, I must tell them about this when I talk to them tomorrow. And one of them was that I had a somatic panic response one day. I was doing a particular exercise, which you may or may not know. It's really horrible. It's called a split squat.
Oh, I know what that is.
Even just saying that makes
me horrible is correct. That's a good word for it. Yeah,
it's horrible. Yeah. So I was doing that, and I really struggle with that.
We got podcast listeners. We got to describe it.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
We have to in words. See, and believe it or not, here we are talking about non-words, and we totally rely on words.
So imagine if you're standing 3 feet in front of a bench that you.
So you're 3 feet in front of a bench.
Yep,
and you've are you facing the bench or facing away from the bench?
Away from the bench, and
away from the bench.
Away from the bench, and you've got one of your feet with the top part of your foot is on the bench behind
on top of the bench, right?
On top of the bench behind you. I don't think it's. I couldn't do 3 feet.
And then you squat.
I want to correct this to that.
What is right.
Just about your distance of your leg behind you, whatever that is, folks.
But yes, whatever the list.
But you got a leg back there, hoisted up and resting, and the top of your foot is resting on the bench.
So you're right, right. So you're really just on one leg.
One leg resting up there on the bench behind you.
And you sometimes have to do
this. And be careful.
Yeah, whoa. You sometimes
we
have to
do this. We're not advocating this without a personal trainer and all that. We don't want nobody coming and suing us.
No.
No, don't go doing this on your own. Get help to try this for the first time, because this ain't easy.
No.
Nor is it fun.
No.
So I was doing this, and I never find it.
And then you squat. And by the way, we left out. Then you squat down on the one leg, and the other leg's behind you. Just like a barrel full of monkeys, full of fun.
You're trying to get as low as you can, right?
Yeah.
Be able to return back up.
Get all the way down there and then push yourself back up. Yeah, it'll be just lovely.
So I had been tasked with 10 of these things on each leg.
10?
Yes. And when it got to my weaker leg, I got to about 5, and I could feel, there was no thoughts. I was in pure panic. I wasn't even aware of being in panic. Noticing had gone. There was no emotional content to it. It was just my heart was beating really fast. I was feeling nauseous. Right. There's stars in front of my eyes. Yeah. And the coach said, "We're not going to do 10. Just do 2 more." And
good for him.
Yeah. And I got up and he said, you were having a panic response. And I went, "Yeah." And he went, It happens when the body, mind, or whatever. Yeah. Feels the workability is just like not. That's what happens.
Yeah,
gone, right.
And you kind of have to override that sometimes to move on to another level of just sort of like say to.
In reality, you noticed it and got you out of it, right? In reality, folks, there is a limit.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, oh no, you know, with proper circumstances, I could lift a house. Oh, really? I want to see it because you ain't. You're not going
to
do it.
Somebody telling you to do 10 of these. Okay, I'm about 5.
It's not going to happen. There are times when there are things. You're not going to lift a battleship. No. Nobody's going to try to lift a battleship. There are things that are just outside of your personal physical ability. And 10 of those, what do they call them? Split squats or whatever. 10's outside of mine. Let me put you that way. I can guarantee you.
Well, I thought
and that's
that
not
I...
a middle block either, Phil.
Well, that's a 5 cents experience, Gavin.
My body thought 8 was outside it. Yeah. My coach thought it could. My body thought 6 was the absolute limit.
Yeah. No, I do think 8. I could do 1. I do think that. I think I could do 1, and then maybe in a couple of days I'd do 2. And then I might, 3 days later, I'd do 3. You know, and I get up there. I'm graduated to get up there. Thing is, folks, now let's go back to the mindful stuff. Let's just go back to that. You don't have to do any of this stuff all at once. It's just a stepwise progression, especially when it comes to muscles. They have to develop. They have to have rest in between when you use them, especially when you're brand new at something. I mean, obviously, once you get to become a professional athlete, your recovery period between when you use them is much less. But when you first start out, give yourself a break. Start slow. Don't kill yourself. Don't hurt yourself. And that's about mindfully going through it, just being listening to your body, watching your body, noticing your body. Don't push past the limits, because you'll end up hurting yourself, and then you'll take weeks to recover, and that's no good. Be better off doing it a little bit at a time. 1,000 repetitions, that's not that bad. 5 a day. If you did something five times a day, In 100 days, it's 500. 200 days, there you go. You're at 1,000. Way less than a year, you're at 1,000 repetitions. There you go.
And a good and a really good coach, because you know I haven't had.
Yeah, there is. Now I will say there is something to be said for personal trainers, coaches, whatever you want to call them. They're, I've discovered from Phil and I have been talking with some fitness people, fitness coaches, personal trainers, that kind of folks. So they have more than one name for themselves, but they are good to have. And no doubt about it. What it motivates you.
Yeah. It does motivate you because you don't, you can't, the away moves are just not possible when you get into that session. So, you know, it, you're sort of like forced into a toward move mindset.
Well, you got responsibility to somebody. Well, we are, and it sounds like you have a good trainer, so I'm not.
You have a mindful trainer. He's not doing mindfulness.
Yeah, you have a mindful trainer. We've discussed some that they go to school and they learn all of these, you know, routines that people need to do. And so somebody comes in and meets with them and they give them all of these routines that they need to do.
Yeah.
And then for some reason they don't show back up.
Yeah.
The massive no-show rate. You know, it's like, why aren't people sticking with me? Why aren't that? Well, it's in these people that are now using the Matrix to connect people with yummies and yuckies.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great term? So you got to connect it up with the yummies.
You got to get the yummies out of the deal.
You make it all yuckies, people won't show back up. And you got to make it pleasant. And
you've got to notice what's right for that person. So
that's the thing.
So when my noticing isn't there, his noticing takes over. His noticing's there all the time. And what you said about the yummies, we were talking about this the other day too. You know, his good is there as a both a reward, but also as a feedback. And when he noticed, I hadn't noticed, but he noticed that a lot of times, particularly after difficult things, when he says good, I go, good, yeah. And I realized when he said that it was important for me to say good to myself, because I can accept someone else praising me, but I needed to praise myself because I really struggle with that. I struggle with, you know.
Well, that's because you've come out of a culture, a Western culture, that tells you you're not good enough.
Yeah.
All the time. Several, you know. Hey, you know what? It cheats. It does about 1,000 times a day. In all one day. There's a whole bunch of different entities all saying it. Hey, is it? You're not going good enough. Buy this. You're not good enough. Buy this. You know, and you get a lot of those messages. And so for somebody to say, good, you did good. And then you, yeah, I did good. Well,
it's cool. Great. it's great. I can feel, oh, is I'm giving myself a tick. I'm actually saying I'm okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to add that into that personal trainer stuff, Phil.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing to add in.
Oh, that. Yeah.
BJ Fogg in his Tiny Habits book, I heard him on a podcast. I haven't read the book, but he talked about how in instituting new habits, you should do a celebration after the habit. So he will literally do a kind of like, awesome, dude, well done, you know, of the dopamine circuits and the rewiring things.
Yeah. I call it, I like to say, I want to give you credit right now for something, right? Like, in other words, it's kind of like you kind of say it to them and then they give themselves, then now you give yourself credit, right? That's what you're doing.
Yeah. I'm not going to dispute dopamine circuits or whatever. It's fine. But it feels good and it's a yummy.
Yeah.
And people tend to show back up for yummies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because in that situation, you gave yourself a yummy. So you're going to want to, more likely to want to go back.
Come back, right. Mm-hmm. And I guess the writ large that, many of the trainer communities, well, they don't know what the person's yummies are. And that's the thing. That's how we use the matrix.
Yeah, that's how
I don't mean to be coy, folks. No. It's easy. You go down in the lower right-hand quadrant and you have a conversation with people. Well, who's important to you?
Right,
you know, in the lower right-hand quadrant. Well, who's important? I mean, before we start boxing or keto or fit personal trainer or whatever, well, let's have a conversation about who's important to you. What's important to you? You know, in America, we might say, what floats your boat? You know, What's and basically the big conversation is, what are your yummies? And then when you do something or you get feedback from the world, what yummies are those? Well, let's tailor this and do all of this so it fits you. You know, it doesn't make any sense for me to tell you, you know, hey, you're fat, you need to lose weight. You know, how many people are going to show back up? Not me. I don't like people calling me fat and telling me I need to lose weight. Bye. Yeah, I don't need that.
Someone might.
The thing is, what are you here for? Now, and we, Phil and I love use the one, well, I'm here so I can play with my grandbaby.
Right.
You know, I want to do this personal training thing so I have the energy to play with my grandbaby. Well, God darn, that's cool. Now, does that mean they're going for the Olympic swim team? No. It doesn't mean that they're focused on, you know, losing 50 pounds or something. No. It means they're focused on getting in good enough physical shape, whatever it is for them, so they can play with their grandbabies. There you go. Mm. That we can work toward that. And that's a yummy. Mm. That's a hell of a yummy. And now they'll work toward that. And we can have discussions about, well, given what we're doing here in the training room, whatever we're doing, how is it working? Mm-hmm. You know, how does it feel like it's working to get you there, you know, move you in that direction? And then people will show back up.
Yeah.
So the trick is learning how to do that.
Yeah.
With the matrix. It's not as hard as you think with the matrix. So maybe people don't think it's hard at all. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of assumptions, whereas the using the matrix allows you to home in on what someone actually wants rather than what you might assume they want.
It's the assumings. Hey, that's a good one, folks. Phil, we need to add that. Hey, Busy, you're writing a whole course.
Assumings? Yeah.
We'll just copy this all down and we'll have the whole course. But it is, right. In school, whatever school that might be, they learn what's wrong with people. And so they assume they know what's wrong with people. And so then they go about, you know, basically telling people what they need to do and how they need to get in shape. And oh, by the way, science says you need to weigh 187 and a half pounds or whatever it is.
According to your BMI.
Yeah, your BMI is right. Needs to be this. And yeah. You need to be able to do this X, Y, and Z and all that. And people go, okay, but I want to lift my grandkids up. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's the goal. That's the who's important. That's what's getting you going. And that's much more important. And that keeps you on the, okay. Now we can write the song, The Yummy Side of Life.
Yes. Finally come.
We're going to get Bill to write us a song, The Yummy Side.
We'll get our songwriter involved with this.
We have a songwriter. He wrote the Monkey Matrix song.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, we'd have to have the dramatic, the yucky side of life.
Well, yeah. So,
but anyways, yeah, this is fabulous, Izzy. Yeah. So to recap, folks, what I understand is Izzy went in to learn boxing.
Yes.
Which, by gosh, is just wild. That is cool. So you go into and learn boxing with a personal trainer. So you end up getting one who's a pretty mindful kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He may be a weightlifter kind of guy, but he's a mindful kind of guy.
Yeah, he's tuned in.
And he had tuned in to what you were after in this. And wasn't trying to turn you into a pro boxer.
No.
That kind of thing, but then you start mindfully moving in the boxing ring or outside, wherever you're practicing the patterns. And if you haven't watched boxing, folks, come, it's patterns. It's left jab, this, that, duck, boom, yeah. Bop, bop. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're good at it, you know, you set up a pattern. And of course, then the object of the game is to disrupt the other person's pattern. And if they don't have a pattern, they're toast. They're an amateur and they're toast. Really. That's what you
they're
see.
They're ill prepared.
You see it if you watch YouTube highlights. You'll see some guy coming in and say, oh, all I got to do is hit hard. Yeah. No. Be people come in who have spent thousands of hours preparing for pattern boxing, and they just take a 30 minutes, 30 seconds or so to figure out that this person's just wailing away, and they just hit the pattern on them, and boom, they go away. So anyway, that's, so you've learned that. So, wow. Yeah. That is cool. And you can take this to any sport.
And it's been even more useful for other, you know, for work.
We don't know what you do for work. I know what you do, but
that's
an interesting job.
I'm a sports journalist, usually football, primarily football, 99% of the
time. Okay, now, we're in the USA, so everybody's thinking all right, it's soccer in the USA, football in the good old UK. Yes, and she's a journalist. And so she knows about soccer players. I didn't say soccer / football players who get in the zone.
Yes.
Do the noticing.
And I was talking to one of my friends who's a former player actually earlier today, and we were talking about being mindful, being present. And he did say that he really believes that in order to make it in that sport, or in any sport, to generalize, it does require that being present, being mindful and noticing.
And
a lot of players are able to transfer that skill. And he genuinely believes, I mean, you know, he's an ex-player, but he genuinely believes that the people that he knows from the game are, you know, have that presence when mm-hmm. they're with you and that ability to notice, because it has been fine-tuned from years and years and years of training.
Yep.
That's
very transferable. Noticing. And noticing is noticing. Ah, there goes the rabbit hole as well.
Yeah.
But it's very transferable to anything that you do. And that's yummy for you. The technical word, I know the behaviorists out there are going, they're dying.
Well, go ahead.
It's appetitives.
Yep.
We know that. Or I can really make you mad and say it's appetitives. In America, they just can't stand it when you mispronounce it, appetitis. It sounds like appetite, right? I got an appetite.
That's what I think of, right.
Right. And but they're called appetitives, and we all have them. You know, it comes under that, I want that. I want to do that. You know, and now in our slang, well, that's a yummy. And you want to go for yummies. And you know, and yuckies you move away from, you know, like yuckies. So, hey, you got a test tomorrow, Phil. You need to study.
Yeah. Ugh.
The yuckies this year.
Yeah, a bunch of yuckies. Along with some thinking about what I can do to avoid doing that.
Here we go. You know, almost all of us have done it, you know. Like, that's yucky. I can avoid that yucky. Of course, now, why would that be so yucky? Because we're in a Western culture that punishes the hell out of you if you fail at a test.
Oh, yeah.
So the odds are always very high. And not the odds, I mean the risks are high that if you go into a test and blow it somehow, you'll be a total failure, right? It'll go on your permanent record.
Yep. Now I'm back in first grade.
And forevermore, they will refer to you as the failure test taker. I am catastrophizing here, but that's basically where your mind goes. And nobody wants to be confronted with that kind of crap, so it's hard. It becomes very difficult. Those are yuckies, or things where you get pleasure out of doing. And there are yuckies in life. There's no doubt about that. But the Western world makes a. We're not very good on the education front. Let's just face it. And I know I have a professional with me.
Yes,
he's right down there below me.
That's right.
Master's degree.
Yeah. We have set this whole thing up as a big away move.
Right. We've set
up. Don't fail.
Right. Exactly. Don't fail. Right. Well, you go in the boxing ring, right? Okay. Don't fail.
Yeah.
and you're not going to be a very good boxer.
No.
Or a good soccer player, football player, you know, any sport. You're not going to be any good if that's your constant. But by the way, our educational system leaks over into those things, into don't fail, don't fail, don't make a fool of myself. And then that gets in the way of just getting into the flow, into the buzz, and learning much more quickly what works. The great thing about getting your head out of the way in these physical activities is that your body learns very quickly.
Yeah.
Much more. I mean, it still takes time. I'm not saying it doesn't take repetitions, but it takes a whole lot less repetition than if you're stopping between each move and then verbally analyzing it. That, and especially you're saying, you know, damn it, I really screwed that one up. How could I be such an idiot? Oh, that helped.
Yeah. My yuckies, I just added more yuckies to my pile of yuckies.
Right. Folks, I'm telling you right now, that does not help your learning any physical activity. That does not help. Learning physical activities is about noticing the movement and noticing if the movement works or not. That's it. And it requires no verbal stuff at all. It's do it and notice what happens. Notice the success, how successful it was. You know, did you hit the spot in the tennis court? Did you hit the person square on the jaw in boxing? Did you gently show the person the way to peace in Aikido as they adroitly hit the mat? Whatever it was, you'll notice if it worked. You'll notice that's it. It requires no words. And part of the reason why you have to practice it 1,000 times is because the words keep showing up and getting in the way.
Yeah.
Get to the point where you can let go of the words.
Right. The number would probably be 500 if we just let go of the words. But instead it's 1,000 because words keep showing up and getting in the way. And that's the essence of ACT, isn't it, folks? Acceptance and commitment training and therapy. The whole idea is based on that. Our language, which is wonderful, and we can do podcasts with it, right? But it also shows up and gets in the way of a bunch of stuff, like learning how to box.
I am
impressed. But I don't think I'm going to go learn how to box. I'm going to stick
with it. You're going to let Izzy be the expert on that.
I'll let she be the expert. The mindful boxer. She can put that on the back of her robe.
Well, that's our, we have to also label the podcast too.
Yes.
Really? How you like that one? The mindful boxer.
I just, before you go, you saying you have to get words out of the way. When I was working at the World Cup in Russia, we were based in Moscow for 7 weeks, and I didn't want to lose ground in my boxing training, so I found a Russian gym where I could train one-to-one with a professional Russian boxer.
Wow.
He was fantastic. He was brilliant. He was 26. He was called Grisha. And he was fabulous, but he couldn't speak English. And I couldn't speak Russian.
Didn't matter.
I mean, we had like three or four words between us. So it was all done on him modeling, sort of like moving.
That's the way Bill's Aikido is.
My Japanese sensei, he's from Japan. Yeah. He has maybe like 10 American English words. That's it.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
He gets up. He demonstrates. You do it. He adjusts you. You know. No.
No words necessary. And by the way, in tennis, it's the same thing. And what you'll see tennis coach after tennis coach after tennis coach doing is he'll gather players up in a circle and talk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Does nothing. It's just worthless. It's just a worthless activity.
It gives you a break.
It's fun to fart around. Do things, but it's not learning. It's physical. They just show people how to do it.
Yeah.
Set up a target or set up a pattern. And by the way, once you get to a certain level of tennis, you're also playing patterns. That's what you do. Play the pattern, play the pattern, play the pattern. Boom, 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 do this. You know, keep playing it. But no words necessary.
Yeah. If you're a Russian boxer, right?
Yeah. I really loved him. He was young enough to be my son. And if I could have just like shrunk him down and brought him home and had him, I just loved him. He was a superstar, and it was no words.
Yeah.
Cool. You must have been thinking that Rocky movie.
Yes. Drago.
Yeah, Rocky.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It just took me back there now too.
Phil lives right outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to those steps, isn't
he? He runs up those steps.
I love those movies.
Those are great. Those are great.
And Creed. They're really good.
Creed, yeah, all of them. Yep.
Yep, they're great. Okay. Well, we've had a grand time. Oh, no, is that all? Okay, the Mindful Boxer. Is that an okay name?
Yeah.
We got it.
Okay. So that will work for that. That's the Mindful Boxer. We'll call that this podcast. I'll have it up. I'm one behind because of my travels. Just folks know, I just needed to travel for family business last few days. So I got one podcast behind, but I'll get it out in this one and I'll be caught up. And stay tuned for more personal training. Psychological flexibility.
Applied to personal training.
Applied to personal training. Right. We're going to do that.
Brilliant. I've
got some interest in that. Let's do it. I think it's a good place. Yeah. And it also helps us get really smack dab in the middle of the you're not good enough.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, we like to be in the middle of that. We like to say, we liked you just the way you are.
Made this day a special day.
Mr. Rogers, we're quoting Mr. Rogers, famous.
He's the patron saint of the Matrix, the act matrix, by the way.
Oh, he is. He definitely is. Well, okay, we did it. So we will sign off.
Okay.
And
thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming, as always.
Bye-bye. Just stay right there, though.
Yeah.
Let me say, stop recording.